I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. Pope Francis and President Obama have each taken the pilgrim path to an American prison this season, as if to underline the point that mass incarceration, building up these last 40 years, is now something to be seen, heard, and talked about. This hour, and in the campaign year just begun, comes the question, now what?
Once the president leaves, we still got to be there with those officers and that staff. They control every aspect of our living while we're there.
The average person that you explain what's going on there, they're probably never really going to be able to understand or believe or comprehend.
Yeah, we put ourselves in a situation to be incarcerated. But when you have someone that's constantly reminding you and telling you that you're not worth nothing and they're treating you that way, it's hard to have a rehabilitative mindset.
It's just a horrible place to be in.
The air is being recycled. The air is trash in there. I'm breathing in there and I feel like I'm dying every day I'm breathing. The water's recycled. The food's garbage.
You just gotta try to do your time as best as you can and make things work.
In the larger frame is the trend line. Since the 1970s, the United States has become the number one jailer in the world per capita. There's a steep racial tilt in those numbers, too. More blacks than whites or Hispanics are behind bars today. Among young black males, about one in four will have done jail or prison time before he's 35. So we are all ears this radio hour with four Bostonians in a church basement in Dorchester. We're on a listening mission that began almost accidentally months ago with Azan Reed. He's got roots in Trinidad, Dorchester High School, and Mattapan. He was cooking in a good restaurant in Kendall Square, Cambridge, when we met him. He's 33 now, wide open to talking about a miserable 4 years in prison, a blessing nonetheless, in that prison restarted his life.
Nobody in school ever sat down with me and figured out what my goals and dreams was. I had to figure that out on my own in jail by reading books. That's the only thing that got me to thinking different. That's the only thing that made me realize I was smart.
Azan Reed introduced us to Unique Ismail, his friend from prison basketball and the workout room.
Born in North Carolina. Father of four children and one on the way. Sad to say, I've done a number of sentences. Various different reasons, selling drugs or just losing my temper and assaulting someone. And I'm trying to turn my life around. It's a journey. You don't get younger, and it doesn't get easier.
Unique is in his mid-40s. Douglas Benton is in his 50s now, half a generation older than Azan Reed, confidently recovered from the highs and the lows of a hellish growing up.
I'm a product of the environment that I grew up in, the violence, the drugs, the gangs. You know, my father shot dope. My mother ended up being a prostitute to support his habit. And, you know, the community was crazy. It was nothing good about the community I grew up in. There was nothing positive. Everyone was in survival mode. And so I adapted to that.
Marcel Felton is the quiet man in our group. He learned all he needed to know about prison in a one-year bit.
The time that I lost with my kids meant a lot to me. That's not something that I want to do again, you know what I mean? Be away from them for that long.
Also for Azan Reed, family pain was the wake-up.
It was terrible being there because my family had to send me money there. My kids never seen me, and then I had to beg people to come and see me and all this and all that and the third. That's terrible living. Nobody should want to go live like that, and I couldn't understand why people keep wanting to go back, especially for the things they go back. Now, selling drugs or doing this or doing that to feed your family, that's one thing, but out here killing people and doing stupidness, stealing cars and just to look cool and clothes and stealing clothes and all that to go to prison, that's stupid. Now, I can't fault people that's doing what they got to do to put a little bit of food on the table to feed their kids.
Why do people go back, Azan?
Most people, 90% or, you know, close to that, probably don't have no other choice. They
you
only
know
got...
how they go back by choice. Like they say, I think I'm going to go to jail this winter. I'm going to go to prison this summer, you know. I always hear people say, oh, you like being locked up. I don't know nobody. Personally, I don't know nobody, and I've done a few bids, and I know a lot of people. I don't know nobody personally that likes to go to jail. I know, I damn sure don't. And I hate people saying that, but what it is with the recidivism, a lot of times, oftentimes, especially in Boston and other big cities, some of us don't have a choice, like you said. A lot of us have kids by the time we're 20 years old, 21 years old. I had two by the time I was 19. Okay, now you got your kids' mothers and their families and the rest of society just in your neighborhood alone looking at you like, what are you going to do to feed this baby? Okay, yeah, you can go and get a job. You know, some people, they get a job and it works out for them. But if you got a girlfriend like I did from the same neighborhood you're from, and, you know, her life is pretty much street life, too, somewhat. They're looking at you, you know, baby need Pampers, baby need milk, this, that, and the third. The baby need clothes. You live in Boston, so the seasons change. It's not like you in one environment where it's one climate. You can pretty much buy the same type of clothes. No, this baby going to need coats and boots and jackets. And in the summertime, baby going to need shorts. And you're going to need all of this stuff, too. Now, if you're not providing this, then society looks at you as a piece of garbage. Oh, you're a deadbeat. You're not doing what you got to do for your kid, but you done already been in trouble. Ain't too many places trying to hire you. Maybe you made some bad decisions. You might still smoke weed in your spare time, but that could be the only bad thing that you do. But because you got in trouble before and now that you smoke weed, it's hard to get a job. But you got my man right here like, yo, I know you messed up in the game. Here, take this. Give me back $200 and just keep it going. And it's easy because all you got to do is just stand there like, oh, what's up? You want something? Yeah, I got it right here. And they get comfortable doing that because you're not getting dirty. You don't have to lift nothing. You don't have to travel. You don't have to do none of this nonsense. And your eyes become nonsense because you can get money right here in your neighborhood. And the only occupational hazard that you have is getting caught by the police. And a lot of people, they look at it like, maybe it's worth it. If I'm making $300, $400, $500 a day or better, depending on your market and where you're at, you know what? Damn that job at McDonald's or Bradley's or wherever, you know, you can possibly get hired being an ex-con, ex-felon. I'm going through all of this nonsense and Stop and Shop stacking groceries and I made $311. I just made that yesterday. Just sitting on the block. You do the math. I ain't had to go nowhere. That's why people go back and forth because, okay, every good thing comes to an end. Yeah, I'm out here getting all of this money, but somebody in this room don't like the fact that I'm getting all of this money. So he done says something to him to put the battery pack in his back because he don't like me. Okay, as soon as I piss him off, he might tell his girl, yeah, call the police on that mom. Call the police on him. Oh, you seen where he put his gun at? Yeah, call the police, tell him where it's at, it's his. That happens. You got people that do that, and now here, Azan or Unique or Marcel or Douglas. He might have sold this to me. He might just be sitting there with me. But due to the fact that he done been locked up before, it's a joint venture now. Oh, yeah, you was down with him. Even if he didn't even know he sold me no drugs. Oh, you going too. It's your word against theirs now. So, it's, you know, the recidivism, it's not so much people wanting to go back to jail. Sometimes it's just the circumstances.
Right. It's a lifestyle. You know, you get addicted to that fast, easy money. You know, you get addicted to having it your way. You know, going to prison, you know, I said it was a blessing for me back then. It was 20, 25 years ago. It's not the same now. They're not teaching brothers skills. They're not really pushing brothers to come out to get into these programs. There are really no programs really right now to get brothers jobs in a trade. Even if you have a quarry, you come out, you get a trade, you can make a good living for yourself.
Another thing is, like, once we're taken out of our environment, okay, maybe we were dealing with a female. She done moved on. You know, a lot of us come out with no damn place to go. So, yeah, we might come out and get a halfway house for a month or two, maybe even up to 6 months. But once you got to go and once your time is up, then it's where the hell are you going to go? Like me, I have very little family. Everybody's struggling. You know, I got sisters with kids. They can't take their 45-year-old brother in to sleep on the couch or take one of their kids out of their room. I just was fortunate enough to be dealing with somebody that said, yo, I want you to come live with me. But had I not had that woman at the time, I would have came out in the middle of winter because I got up February 3rd. Mm-hmm. February 3rd, it was the day after a bad snowstorm here. They had shut Rentham down. I couldn't even go shopping. And I kind of knew the relationship was going to be bad. She was 45 minutes late coming to get me on the day I wrapped up. Had she not came to get me, I would have took a bus back to Boston, got back around the way, yeah, I'm out. Now, where in the hell am I going to go? So now, I got to go ahead and make some money to get a room, just a place to stay. Yo, I need $500 to put down on this room. if I stand out on this block for 2 days, I can get that $500. As opposed to coming, Chris, I need $500 for a place to stay. Well, you still need $500 because I don't have it, you need. And that's pretty much what we go through. You know, and you could have it or you couldn't have it, but the fact of the matter is you might not be able to give it to me and I still need a place to rest my head. So some of us, we're fortunate enough to get women that, yeah, come on in. Some of us don't want to do that. I've done that a little bit too much in my lifetime. But
you say leaning on women.
Yeah, and that's one thing I never really liked doing, but I've been in a couple situationships with women where it was like, yeah, come on, stay with me. But as soon as she got mad or tired or you're not getting the money you used to get or whatever the case may be, because this is what we deal with. This is what we have to deal with. Your girlfriend, like, I need more money. These kids need this. These kids need that. Now you got a car. The car needs gas. The car needs to be fixed. You need to eat. So many variables, so much stuff to deal with coming out. And then if you're in a situation like I was in and the woman, she's not, you know, she has some moral issues too or whatever. Now, you're not getting the money that you normally would give her or whatever. She's not feeling that. So now it's time to go because there's always somebody else that will. You know, and that's how I ended up. I walked in on a situation where, you know, I seen it and I lost it. You know, I walked in on my girl and somebody else in bed together. So, you know, I lost it. Some people have killed, some people haven't. But my point is we have a lot of obstacles that we have to deal with. You know, okay, yeah, we done made that mistake. We done got locked up. So now we already got that brand against a convict, felon, criminal. Now you come out, you've been locked up for so much amount of time, you're broke. You got kids on the street, you're a deadbeat. You ain't got nowhere to go, you're a bum. It's a lot of stuff that you have to deal with. You know, sometimes some people handle it different. Some people have that safety net. They have people they can turn to. But when you're a person like me that don't have that many people that you can turn to, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
That was the voice of Unique Ismail, and before him, Azan Reed and Douglas Benton. Coming up, church pastor Bruce Wall on how we listen to case histories and a composite scandal. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. Tuning in on This, That, and the Third, the elliptical, halfway coded language of men who have survived the pipeline in and out of prison so far. Their records are mostly about doing and dealing drugs through this 30 to 40 year era of mass incarceration in America, a solution that's come to sound as burdensome as any part of the war on drugs. Bruce Wall, pastor of Global Ministries Christian Church in Codman Square. You're Boston-born and bred, a Baptist minister in church and on the street, and you know the courthouses too. There you were in the church basement with us, Bruce. I had a feeling you were hearing stuff you hadn't heard.
Chris, when I sat in that room and saw you interacting with those men, I didn't know if there was going to be an explosion or whether or not those guys would really talk with you. And slowly but surely, they began to talk. To me, it said, I need help, and I also want to help somebody else.
Can I say, I was just struck that these are all nonviolent men, very unscary people. There's also a moral code. It is okay to deal drugs if it's putting food on your kid's table. It is not okay to leave your grandmother without rent in a cold winter. These are men of sensibility.
I feel the need to provide for my children, the family that's taken me in, right, for other folk. But if I can't do that the right way, the only way that I know is to turn the corner.
It's hard to hear, Bruce, as we just did, a man that was unique say that he had no damn place to go the day he came out of state prison. In the movies, there was a $100 bill or something as you left Leavenworth. These people have nothing and nobody there. Do they come to the churches? And where are the churches here?
Chris, I've heard the story of men and women who are now sleeping behind a church in Codman Square. A lot of us, including our church, we're still trying to figure out how we can intervene and how we can help. They knock on our door because one of our pastors goes to visit them on a regular basis. They knock on the door. We've had some of them in a recovery group that we have at the church. But over the weeks, they're there for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then all of a sudden you see them begin to stop coming. Mm-hmm. And then you begin to hear stories about what they're doing with their families. Next thing you know, they're back in jail.
On the recidivism point, it's so clear that a job is the biggest thing that's missing.
A job is the biggest thing that's missing because of the issue with Corey. We have been trying to fight and address the issue of
Corey. Spell it out, Corey.
As soon as you write on the job application that you have been incarcerated, you have a felony, you lose the opportunity. If you don't tell and they do their background checks and they find out that you have a felony, you lose the job. So, yes, these guys and gals want to be gainfully employed, but that record is hurting them.
Killing them.
It's hard for them to reconcile what they were doing in the streets, the amount of money that they received, and now trying to do it the right way, not providing for themselves or their families.
I want to go back to the real authorities in this hour. There are four African-American men in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who know the pipeline coming and going. They're drawing a portrait of an era and of a generation. I'm asking them, starting with Azan Reed, for the markers of their time and the place they happened into.
You know, we just all are less fortunate because, you know, we just come up with the odds uneven for us as a whole, black people as a whole. When you compare us with white people, the game's uneven. The playing field's uneven, you know. White people come up, good family, you know, they come home at a reasonable time for their kids and they can teach their kids at home, have a meal set, they got a good job, 401k plans and all that, so they're pretty stable to take care of their kids and teach their kids what's life about. But when you come from a place where you're struggling every day and you can't think too much about your kids' future because you gotta think about the next day, how are you supposed to raise honorable, healthy, strong-minded kids? How? When you don't even have time to, you gotta work two jobs, maybe single parent, if not, y'all are killing each other trying to work, arguing about bills, arguing about the car or the house, nobody can clean it enough because we're working all the time, the kids is dirty in it, home running around by themselves. This is how I came up. My mother working two jobs. How could she teach me anything? As soon as she come home, the only thing she got time to do is cook and send me in the shower and get ready for school tomorrow. She came and checked my homework.
Papa? Uncles?
Father not
grandma,
around. Sorry? Father, epidemic of drugs. Like most of us that grew up in the hood. You know? Drugs took over. Having to struggle and work so hard and kill yourself just to survive took over. That's a simple difference. When you're comfortable, you can do whatever you want in life. But when you're not comfortable and you panic every day, all day, I've been panicking for 33 years now. Mm. I was probably a baby. I was probably 1 year old panicking. Don't even know it right now.
Traumatized.
And the thing is,
because my parents are arguing. I'm probably looking at them arguing. Don't even realize what affected me to this day. Mm-hmm. It's that.
You need to come back to the question of a generation. Why you? Why now? Why black people in this country? Why from the 70s to the new century? An epidemic of incarceration.
It stems from, you know, different things like the drug use in the 70s. I was born in 1970. My father was a Vietnam vet, U.S. Marine. My situation was my mother was his girlfriend on the side. He was married. He met my mother in North Carolina, started messing with her, got her pregnant. He disappeared. I didn't meet that man until I was 41 years old. Mm. I didn't find out that my stepdad was my stepdad until I was 9. Like what Azan said, a lot of kids, you know, especially in the black community where drugs were more out there, daddy left home in a lot of homes. You know, he might have been forced out. He might have left. But the fact of the matter, he wasn't there. So now we're being raised by a woman that's struggling. She's working two jobs. She's dealing with stuff that we don't even know about because the fact that she's a woman trying to work. Now she's trying to provide for one, two, three kids, however many she may have. Now it's left up to the kid. Me being my mother's oldest son, it's left up to me to make sure my sister don't turn the stove on and don't let nobody in the house. If you answer the phone, they ask where I'm at. I went to the store. I'll be back in a little bit. Don't tell them I'm at work. I got my key, so you shouldn't have to answer the door for nobody. That latchkey kid stuff, I was a latchkey kid to the third power. I had my key around my neck. And I had to sit there, get my sister from the bus, and wait till 5 o'clock till my mother got home. Yeah, don't eat too much. There's some snacks. There's a sandwich or whatever. I'm going to cook as soon as I get in. As soon as mama comes in, y'all all right? If she could, she checked the homework. First thing she's thinking about is putting something in our belly and getting us bathed. So now as time goes on, Unique got to step up and do for Unique because mommy can't always do that. You know, so now Unique got to go out here and he got your little buddy that's teaching him how to steal and make money. Yeah, let me go on with you and do this so I can have my own money. If I sell that to him for $10, I sell enough of them, you're going to give me money. So if I sell 20 of those bags, I get $50 off that or something like that. And 10, 12 years old, $50 is a lot of money. Even now for a 9, 10, 12-year-old, it's not a lot, but it's a good, decent amount of money. But in the 70s and the early 80s, you got $50, you was the man. So with that being said, I had to grow up early. I didn't have a really good childhood. I remember one of my aunts telling me, your childhood sucked because you had to watch after your sisters. You'd be outside, but you had to watch your sister, so you can't even play. My aunt told me she remembered me sitting my sister up against a tree just so I can play with my other friends. She took my sister to watch it just so I could have an hour of playtime. And that's like that with a lot of different families. Everybody makes bad decisions. Some women make decisions to keep children that maybe they shouldn't. They shouldn't have got pregnant with to begin with. But some of them, you know, everybody say a child can be a blessing. Yeah, but it can also be a burden if you can't feed that child. You don't have the money to feed and clothe the one you got already. Now you're bringing another one into the world. And if the father is a dude like myself, Azan, or this brother here, we gonna do what we gotta do, but it's only so much we can.
Douglas Benton was in and out of prison on drug charges 2 decades ago.
But even from generation to generation, to me, I think it's still the same problem. I know growing up in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, hip-hop started. The drugs was poured into the black community. Poverty was rampant in the black community. The violence was off the hook in the community. I walked out the door, there's ambulances running up and down the streets, drugs being sold, prostitution. I mean, this is the environment that I grew up in. This is how I came out the door. There was nobody teaching us about positivity, being successful. Like this brother said, if you had a home to come back to, you was fortunate in the projects, you know? So that's what brothers come out of jail most of the time too. It's like survival mode. It's still the same thing from the 60s all the way up to the 2000.
That's what I'm still wondering about. Does this common experience, does it give you room for connection and action?
So me sitting here with these brothers, they see me, they hear me talking. You know, they know now that where I came from, I'm just like them. They know that I've overcome some obstacles. They don't know what I go on a day-to-day basis because it's still a struggle for a black man out here. I get pulled over like everybody else. You know what I'm saying? My friends might have a burn in the car. Like you said, I get in the car with them. They still doing what they do. It's a joint venture. We don't get a shake. We don't get a fair shake. The justice system there's no justice.
Marcel Felton went away for a year on a gun charge.
I grew up single parent, raising 3 boys. My mom's had a job, lost it. Couldn't pay the rent, shelters, and all that craziness. You know, mothers is out here working hard, trying to pay bills. Meanwhile, we run in the streets, and the streets is raising us. You know what I'm saying? In my era, it was all about flashy clothes and, you know, who got the best sneakers and this and that. So that's why everybody do what they do. They start selling drugs because they want all this flashiness. Everybody wants to keep up with the new Jordans and the new coats and Averex leather jackets was back in my day, you know what I'm saying? So that's what we used to do, you know what I'm saying? My mother was a single parent. I wanted new Jordans. I wanted new this and new that. And an older guy from around my way told me, yo, you take this, you know what I'm saying? I give you this much and you bring me back that much and we good. We're going to keep that going and there you go. There go your school clothes, you know what I'm saying? My mother's a single parent raising 3 boys. School clothes cost a lot of money, you know what I'm saying? So I had to do what I had to do. And so on, RIP to my brother, he had to do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? He had to get out there, sell drugs, just so we could get our school clothes. And that's what we had to do. And that's what we did.
You're addicted to the lifestyle, and you're not taught anything else. You go to prison, and you know the lifestyle's still there. Where we come from, it hasn't changed. You go back to the block, the faces might change, the game stays the same.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like nobody's going to kick open doors for us. They're not teaching us anything different in jail. It's like if you apply yourself, like the brother was saying, you read. I went to groups. I was just trying to get out early, to be honest with you. I didn't really know. I was really developing myself to be a better person.
Right.
You know, and I happened to have substance abuse problems. I was using drugs. I didn't really sell a lot of drugs. I took them. You know what I'm saying? Which was more of a problem for me because, I hurt people. But that's a short-lived life. And so I didn't want to die like everybody else. Like all my friends, my father, my brother, other people, all my best friends were dying out here. And so I decided that, after doing that time, I wanted to do something different, that I had to do something different. I was given an opportunity, like I said, by brothers that came before me. I got around people that taught me everything that I know, gave me opportunity to get a job. People gave me opportunities, and I just asked for it. And I started to apply myself, and one step at a time, I'm here today. But it doesn't happen for everybody. And people... There's another thing that goes unaddressed. When people are locked up, they don't address their substance abuse problem. They don't address their mental health issues. I got counseling.
You'd be ashamed.
A lot of people don't really feel like they need counseling. I needed counseling because I didn't know what was wrong with me. I knew I was traumatized. I knew I grew up in a subculture, an environment that was detrimental to me and everybody around me. But I thought that was how everybody lived. I didn't know there was people out here brimming with love and patience and tolerance for life, and I didn't get that.
It's all about equality, man. It's all about having an even playing field and everybody having even opportunities to make the best for themselves from birth.
Why don't we have it?
Why don't we have it? Because, like he said, the people of the powers don't want certain groups of people to have that type of power. The struggle that we go through can either... build relationships like this. Now I know this brother. I might see him in the streets. What's up? How you doing, my brother? How's your day? I see something bad happening. I might help him. You know what I'm saying? Because I know him now.
This should be happening all the time.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stories like this in every neighborhood. But society doesn't allow us to be able to do that. They want to deaden the spiritual positive energy in our community. When you turn on the news, all you want to see is bodies laying down, memorials on the sidewalk. They don't show you that there's a lot of positive things going on right down the street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're not going to bring the camera crews down here for this. This isn't important in life. What's important is all the negativity in life. There's different levels to this, man. Just like you said, a young kid might see the gold chain and that, and think that's the best thing in the world. Mm-hmm. But in other places like the suburbs, they think boats are and bikes and different things like that. They got a different mentality. We grow up and we idolize things that make us look like we're doing good in life.
Right.
In the suburbs, sneakers and stuff don't matter. They idolize things that actually are doing better for them. Their credit and their boat and their bikes that they're building from scratch with their father and stuff. Those are the different opportunities, different levels. Like, you know what I'm saying? When you can't get to that level at all, you're going to obviously idolize a gold chain or sneakers or something like that because you can never see yourself getting to that level. Nobody in your neighborhood was ever on that level. Nobody you know brought you to experience that level. So how could you ever see that level?
The suggestion is there. It makes you want more even if you can't afford it. Now, look, you go out in Chestnut Hill and all of these rich, affluent neighborhoods, you look at some of these kids' sneakers, they're probably wearing shoes like those right there or something, pretty unassuming. No, not dissing them, something pretty unassuming.
You're knocking his shoes?
Nah. They're just a brand. Now, you come to Dorchester, Roxbury, and drive down Washington Street, drive down Blue Hill Ave, you're going to see kids with brightly lit up sneakers on.
Jordans,
LeBrons, and Kyrie Irvins. And these damn things started at $180. You can go to a store, Mattapan Square, Expressions. Go in there and look at the wall. They got about 10, 11, 15 different pair of LeBron James sneakers that all start at $250. Don't LeBron James got enough damn money? Where am I going with these $250 sneakers that's so special that he can't go in them boots right there? How much you pay for them? Probably about $40. Okay, $20. I put on a pair of $250 sneakers. I can't even walk where you walk. You walk through a muddy trail. You stomp them boots up, you're cool. I walk through a muddy trail, I need a toothbrush and detergent and all of this just to keep these sneakers up because they cost me $250. And then they're going to turn around and the heel on them is going to wear out probably faster than your $20 boots.
Definitely.
But the image is what I'm trying to portray because I was taught that. Yeah, I got to look fly. I got to. If I'm not wearing the LeBrons or the KDs or the Kyrie Irving, I ain't Jack. And we like that because we was taught to value that type of stuff. That's what was important. We was taught that's what was important. We wasn't taught how to build a go-kart.
And part of that was a mistake only because we didn't have nothing. Right. We didn't have nothing. That's so true. We're thinking, why shouldn't we have the best days to offer? Why, you know, we don't have homes. We're living check to check. Why is that? I used to hustle and pay my grandmother's rent. Because she wouldn't have nowhere to live.
And then a lot of
so it was to me, it was like, I didn't have an option. What I did, I put food on the table in my mother's house. Mm-hmm. And my father was using, they didn't have no money. I was like, yeah, you know, I had to do what I had to do. We're going to be all right. So it's the mentality and it's the values. And society pushes those values, especially in the poor urban community. And so as parents, we're supposed to be able to teach our kids different. But the parents don't know no better. It's like we're teaching ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're listening to four African-American men in a Dorchester church basement talking about life in and out of prison. Coming up, just what Azzan Reed meant and what his friends heard about his 33 years of panicking. The fear piece. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. After the Pope's example and President Obama's, we're listening intently this hour to stories from prison with Azzan Reed, Unique Ismail, Marcel Felton, and Douglas Benton. Bruce Wall is with us, pastor of the Global Ministries Christian Church in Dorchester. Do we have perspective yet on this amazing period, 30 years maybe since the crack era, chemical poisons, but with a vicious racial edge to all of it, too. It's incredibly complicated, but it hangs together as the story of an era.
It's not over, but the mass incarceration is creating a whole different culture for us, not only in the city, but it is also creating a different culture in the suburbs. I'm hearing a lot of families approach me when I'm preaching in the suburbs, all quietly saying, I have a family member who's in prison. I need help, but I can't talk about it here.
What would break the silence?
Suppose we were able to provide a forum such of which is what you're doing right now with this broadcast. A lot of people are going to hear this. A lot of people are going to finally gain some perspective on this issue. The question is, what are they going to do with it? Chris, when we talked to the police, and one police officer said, oh, you're the people that are feeding the homeless in Cobman Square. We thought that we needed to just arrest them, and that would solve the problem for others in the community. So had we not intervened, many of these people would have been rearrested for loitering, for trespassing, but now we're providing another opportunity. So we've got to roll up our sleeves, Chris. We've got to delve into this.
Let's go back to our guys, our witnesses. I wanted to go back to something Azzan mentioned. 33 years of panicking. This question of fear, can you locate it?
I just think people fear things that they don't know. You know what I'm saying? Fear of failure. I mean, I don't really fear anything. The only thing I fear is, like, losing my kids. But
you know what Azzan means when he says 33 years of panicking?
Yes. He meant, like, struggling. You know what I'm saying? Just panicking about everything. Just life, period.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just natural when you use all your money to pay the bill, and you never know if you're going to get fired next week.
Right.
How you going to pay the rest of the bills for the rest of the year, or for the next 3 months, or 2 months? You know?
Just a couple weeks.
It's all about you walking down the street, and just because you got a baggy hoodie on. I remember one time I was walking down the street, I had an umbrella in my pocket, and the police thought it was a gun. He could have shot me. walking down the street and seeing a pack of dudes just standing on the sidewalk. Should I cross or should I keep going straight? Are they going to think I'm scared and mess with me because I cross? Or are they going to think I think I'm tough because I'm walking through them? I mean, I can give you 1,000 scenarios.
If you say 33 years, when you were 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 years old.
I came here at 6 years old. I was born here, but I came here when I was 6 years old because I was living in Trinidad. In Trinidad, the only thing I was worrying about was running underneath the porch and getting stung by bees and stealing my next-door neighbor's fruits. I'm not saying there's not violence out there, nothing to worry about, but it's a different lifestyle, it's a different government, it's a different way of living and breathing. As soon as I came out here, I was a lookout boy for my uncle that sold millions of dollars of drugs. As soon as I came out here, I was on a BMX bike telling them if there's cops on this corner or this corner. That's the difference. It's like you have to survive out here any way you can. Out there, all I remember was I never had to worry about eating. I ate off the tree. I ate off the gardens or something if we couldn't afford it in the store. Here, it's always something here you got to worry about. You got to worry about tons of bills. You got to worry about clothing. You got to worry about everything. Everything. You got to worry about losing your job. You got to worry about your boss talking to you any type of crazy way they want to because they feel like you ain't worth nothing because you come from the slums anyways. When I was in Trinidad, there wasn't no slums. Nobody didn't care about that. Nobody didn't care about that. They ain't worry about what you have on your feet, this, that, and the third. Every day you walk outside your house, you got to panic about something. It's
you know,
it's
you
a struggle.
Always got to be on point. You always got to be watching over your shoulder because you don't know what could happen to either one of us when we leave from Reverend Bruce's church. It was one of the worst neighborhoods in Boston. Not even a half mile. About 300 yards, you know. Before you get to the courthouse. You got a courthouse right up the street. In between that courthouse and Reverend Bruce's church, a lot of stuff goes on. Okay? And it's like, some people are just struggling to survive. Some people are doing stuff to get over. It's just your mentality and some people's mentality and mindset come from stuff that they've experienced and went through coming up. All of us, basically, you know, like kids these days, when we was coming up, we didn't have a lot of avenues to make money productively, professionally, or legally. Only thing that was left up to us, we can go try to carry people's bags at the grocery store. In the wintertime, we shovel people's cars out. It ain't like we can start a lawnmower business or a lemonade stand. Ain't nobody, lemonade, boy, get out of here. Most of us grew up in buildings, so ain't no lawns to cut. So I didn't know how to use a lawnmower until I was like 19. I lived in a building all my life. The grass that I seen was in Franklin Park or on the sidewalk right there before you step out onto the street, that little stretch of grass. It'd be on a lot of sidewalks. But you didn't see no lawns unless you went out to like Dedham, Roslindale. And that was like when you're going to the mall when mom and dad got some money, they taking you to the mall. Now it's a special day, and you going on that little trip, and on the way there, you seen all these, I didn't know they had houses like these out here.
Right.
You know, like, for real? Whoa, wow, that's a mansion right there. Because we grew up in an apartment building that you could probably fit our whole apartment in this one room that we're sitting in right now. And in some cases, you can fit 2-3 apartments in this one room that we're sitting in right now. Then you go to your friend, you go to somebody's house, or you see a picture of somebody's house out in Chestnut Hill or Belmont or somewhere where their mother bedroom is big as this one room, this room we're in right now. So it's like, that's a level, you know, you're panicking because you want to do the right thing. You want to get this money because your ultimate goal is to get that big house. It never happens. I mean, it happens for some, but there's too many obstacles in what we call the hood. I mean, nobody really retires off being a drug dealer unless you've been really fortunate and you've done a lot of stuff. Because there's still a price to pay for that. And some people just can't handle that. You know, they don't think of the negativity. All they see is the glitter and the gold. But you got these occupational hazards I talked about earlier. People don't see that. And then when it hits them, a lot of people don't know how to handle it. I could be the biggest drug dealer in Dorchester, and I probably don't know. I ain't even thinking about the consequences. Now the consequences hit me. I get locked up for 6 years. Now I come out, girl I was going with and left me and had a baby or two. She ain't thinking about me. My boys, they done moved on. Some of them done squared up. They're working. They're doing their own thing. They got families more than likely, you know, especially around my age bracket. More, everybody's more or less got families and trying to do something before the end of their life. I mean, because you know what we got? If we're lucky, 70, 75 years on this earth, I'm almost out of mine. I'll be 45 next month. You know, so I got to do something productive. The panic comes from, what the hell can I do to make my situation better? I mean, that was a time when I was messed up in the game. I was homeless. I used to hate to see the night coming. Because the daytime was all well and good. I can do pretty much every... But at night when everything quiets down and everybody's going to lay their head, like, damn, where am I going to go tonight? Am I going to be able to get in this hallway? Am I going to be able to get in the Shattuck or Pine Street or whatever? Do I even want to go through that? Am I going to come up with bugs on me from being around other dirty people? Okay, I got a girlfriend, but I ain't making no money today. She going to be mad. Maybe she want to do something. She got to do laundry. A bill got to get paid. She want to cook something specific. It's just so much stuff that we have to deal with because we've been, we coasted and got over because it was kind of easy. But now when reality sets in and you're the one that got to pay them bills, it's so much to deal with. Some people, I see why some people are just losing their minds because there's been points where I'm like, you know, I just hold my head like, what the hell is going on? And it's not so much that I'm stupid, I'm broke. I'm broke because I don't have the opportunities that you may have or other people have because I got in trouble back when I was young because I was broke and didn't have the opportunity. So it's a snowball effect. I worked this job, was doing pretty good at it, was loving the job. People at the job were loving me. Somebody said something to me. I said something back. Then they go and look and, oh, we seen something in your background we don't like. But I had to go through a background check to get this job. Now you're taking my job, my livelihood away from me for something that I did when I was 32. I'm 44 now. And it didn't have nothing to do with the job whatsoever. It's something, a mistake that I made when I was 32. Now you're taking my livelihood away from me. And this is what happens every day. We go and a lot of guys lose jobs because they lie, because they're not going to get the job they say they've been in trouble. And then they, oh, let me see. Get your ass out of here. But that's your only way of keeping above water. Like you said, people are living paycheck to paycheck. If I lose my job right now, I can be kicked out of door. I can be out of doors next week. That's what people are going through. They're living check to check. I got to make sure I pay this rent, I put food in these kids' belly, and I make sure they're clean, because if they're not clean or if they're hungry and dirty, they're going to take them from me. And they don't want to hear, well, they're hungry and dirty because I was at work trying to make sure that they was provided for. No, they don't want to hear that. No, you're not a good mother, you're not a good father. Give us those kids. Now it's some more stuff that you got to go through. People panic every day.
For every panic on the street, there's a darker version back in prison.
My motivation, my focus was, I had my children out here and I wanted to get out and see them. I was like, my motivation was my rap update. Just, I didn't want to be in prison no more. Some people, they can't even think of nothing else but just getting out. They can't set a plan. And a lot of us, we fail to do that. We can't set a plan that is attainable because all we thinking about, I just got to get the hell out of here. I just got to get the hell out of here.
It's panic. You think about getting out, so you can't do nothing positive.
When you wake up in the morning, I got to get the hell out of here. At night, one more day off the books. And then when, you know, like me and a lot of people, once you get into that last year, because like how much time you got left? I got such and such. Now I got this many days left. I got 304 days left. Tomorrow I have 303. This is how we count. And it's all geared toward getting out because we've been through so much. It's so miserable. I mean, my last bid was miserable. You know, I got involved with a female. She made it a little bit better for me. And I got to a place where I was, it was a little bit more laid back. And I was just certain individual, like him. they made the time better because we understood each other. We went through the same stuff, and we can, you know, vibe and help each other pass the time. You know, playing basketball, lifting weights, playing. I mean, we was playing Risk. Yeah, we were playing the board game Risk.
Pool.
We had got good at that. You know, it's just you have to do something to pass your mind, or you will be miserable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like,
for me personally,
I think back on it, and it's time tears come to my eyes because, like, I don't want to go through that no more because I was miserable. And I'm not that weak where I want to kill myself, but I can understand, I can empathize why some people do it because it's a miserable existence.
You were talking about a crisis. What was that about?
Just the miserable existence is like what's left for me. Now, at 45 years old, it's not a whole lot of productive, big-paying jobs that I'm going to be able to get. Just starting out again. Yeah, I might get something, make $10, $12, $11, something like that. But I'm not going to get a job making $24, $25 an hour unless I know somebody that can plug me in or they done set up a program to let guys like me get those jobs too. Because for the most part, the thing that's available to me, Stop and Shop, Rite Aid. Or,
that's for kids.
You know, yeah, and that's for kids.
Those jobs are for kids. $10, $12 is not going to pay your bills, put food on the table, or put clothes on your back.
But if I don't have
a
job,
lot more money for a lot more stuff than that.
Right. And if I don't have a job, or even if I do have a job and I'm not paying that probation fee, that's grounds for me to get sent back to jail. If I don't have a job, that's grounds for me to get sent back to jail. If I got a job where I can't make it down there to go see you and tell you, yeah, I'm staying out of trouble, I got a job, I'm not doing nothing, I live here. If I can't come down there to do that, I go back to jail.
That's four Boston stories, from school and hood to prison and back, and a last word from Pastor Bruce Wall. Bruce Wall, what's left for Unique?
I'm hearing these guys talk about their future like you and I'd be talking about retirement. They've scanned their entire lives, and now they're trying to figure out how it's going to end. In their minds, they have lived such a horrendous life that they want a little easy street, and they don't know how to get there. These guys have been living so fast, they don't understand that progression. They want some peace now.
What's your theory, Bruce Wall, about people starting again? Azan Reed celebrates prison in one little dimension, that it taught him he's smart. It gave him time alone. Right. It made him a reflective man. What do you say to a person who wants to start anew?
I've heard a lot of guys say to me, had it not been for prison, I would be dead. It slowed me down. It stopped me. I got my life together. I've heard some of those stories. That doesn't mean that every guy is saying, I want to go to prison so I can slow it down. But once in prison, some of them do reflect and recognize, if I wasn't here, I'd be in the morgue. That's reflective. So I think that we need to try to figure out how we help these guys get from where they are to another phase in their lives. That can happen through another discussion, Chris.
I hear prodigal sons all through that conversation.
It's possible to start over. Chris, I think when these guys were in that room talking with you, they started out trying to figure out, what does he want? But after a while, they began to say to themselves, what I'm hearing is, I think I'm not only helping myself by talking, but I can also help somebody else. I can give somebody else a second chance.
Thank you, Bruce Wall. And thank you for inviting us to record at your Boston Praise Radio in the basement of your Global Ministries Christian Church in Codman Square. Thank you, Azan Reed, Marcel Felton, Douglas Benton, and Unique Ismail. Also, Warren Boone. Let's find the others. There's lots more online at radioopensource.org. Leave a comment, please. Our show this week was produced by Connor Gillies, Max Larkin, Pat Tomeno, and Zach Goldhammer. George Hicks is the audio master who recorded our guests and engineered the program.
Mary McGrath is our queen of This, That, and the Third. I'm Christopher Lydon. Join us next time for Open Source.
The fake suckers at home watching the videos. They're going outside trying to portray this stuff. You know what I'm saying?